Due to the graphic nature of this podcast, viewer discretion is advised.
I'm only going to ask you this once, Puzzle. Where's Charles?
The hell if I know.
Don't play dumb with me.
I'm not. I think that tornado Wizard of Oz'd her ass out of here.
And what do you have to prove that?
Well, none really. But what proof do you have that suggests I did something?
Why? You worried we have something on you?
No, because I know I didn't do... It's Charles.
Hello? How is everyone doing?
What is that voice?
Oh no, another member was doing that to me at Akon. I think it was last year or the year before last. So every time we see each other, we're like, hello? Hello? But it came from a meme with Mr. Obama in it.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
But, okay. Anyways, enough silliness, everyone. Happy holidays. We hope you're all doing well. Today, we are going to review God in the Field.
Oh, it's so good.
It is, God. It's a nice, like, piece of candy just for your eyes.
Yes, it's beautiful.
So, basically, this is the kidnapping of Persephone, but with a BL twist. This was written by... VVBG, Very Very Bad Girls, a writer-artist duo. There's Michi, the killer, who's the writer with an AO3 account that you can follow. And then there's Archia, who's the artist with a Patreon account that you can support her through. Now, she did mention she is currently working on a side project with her partner, so that's why if you are familiar with God in the Field, the comic has not continued because of that project.
Yeah.
But it's been 2 years, so you have to wonder, are they ever going to get back to it?
Yeah. But the other comic she writes is Born Sexy Tomorrow, and it is amazing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen that.
And I like that one.
There was another one I noticed called Miles of Painted Darkness. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you like their work, you can definitely look it up. It's over on...
They have Born Sexy Tomorrow on Tapas, and they have... I also found God in the Field on Tapas.
On Tapas?
Yeah.
It sounded like you were saying tap-ass for
tap-ass.
Which is very appropriate for this podcast.
Heck yes, that's the new name.
Tap-ass.
Tap-ass.
But yeah, I was about to say webtoons, and my brain was like, no, it's Tapas. Or tap-ass. I like that.
Tap-ass.
But anyways, it was published. Tapas. It was published on Tapas on April 13th, 2016, and then in April 30th, 2017, that's when it went on hiatus, and we haven't really heard from it since, but I'm sure if you follow their Patreon account or the AO3 account, you may get some answers, but that's just a lot of accounts to go through and see, so.
And, hey, I mean, we all know how the story ends. Like, we know the story. It's just so beautiful, and you want it, like, visually to be there, but.
Right.
I get it. I'm not worried, like, what will happen? I know the story.
True, yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah. So
go check it out.
So what is your history with the comic? Because you're the one who introduced it to me years and years ago.
We've talked about how I like death.
Uh-huh.
Hades is the god of the underworld, so he's practically a version of death. So you said death, I said I'm here. And that's basically the end of that story. And I also, I was looking at this time for historical BL based off of...
the Greek mythos?
Greek mythos is nice, but I was looking in particular for Gawain and the Green Knight BL fanfiction.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh my god, there I have a webcomic for you.
Ooh.
But I found this vicariously through this, because I found a webcomic for Gawain and the Green Knight, and it said, if you like this, you'll also like, and I was like, ooh, God in the Field, Persephone as a boy. I like this.
So is it also on Tapas?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, I will give it to you.
We'll
and
talk.
It's complete.
Oh, even better.
Mm. Gawain and the Green Knight is canonically gay, and you cannot change my mind.
Oh, no. I kind of want to reread it now, because I enjoyed it, but it's been years.
I was sitting in that class in college, and I was just like, I can't let my Fedroshi out. I can't. It's here. I can't do this.
You had to keep it tapped
down. Oh, it was hard.
Okay, so for this will be a pretty much a quick review because there's only two chapters, and honestly, you can read it in like an hour. Yep.
So pretty much.
But I'll try not to go into too many details. But yeah. So anyways, everyone knows the story. Like we said, Hades kidnaps Persephone, but in this version, she is male. And a part of me was wondering if humans are assigning genders to gods to establish a closer relationship with them. If that was just like something that they did in the past.
That's interesting. I mean, we have Norse that sort of play around with genders in general.
Right.
With Loki, but we don't really see that in the Greek gods, which is odd because we have some male gods just springing forth gods from them, from their head and such forth. And right. So it's like, why can't we just do what we want with them? And like, if you read the Percy Jackson series, Apollo's had kids himself.
Oh, damn.
And it's like, he is male, but he has had kids.
Yeah. Please don't say I'm preg, but like.
No, but. It's interesting because I don't feel like there's anything that's beyond them.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, that's why I was wondering. It's like, why are we putting genders to gods? Like, to me, they're genderless. But, I mean, again, in this story, it makes for a nice twist.
Yes.
But anyways, as always, Persephone doesn't put up a fight and seems to be into Hades. Now, we should mention that there's really no dialogue in the story. There's some, but it reads more like a short story where you have the narrator telling you the story, and then there's really no distinction on who is speaking. There's no like speech bubbles above mm-hmm. their heads or a different colored text to signify that it's one character talking and not the other.
It's not drawn like this, but it kind of looks like you see stained glass stories or you see like a mosaic story.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like that, like you're an outsider viewing this story, but you aren't given all of the dialogue or what actually was said between the characters. But it's drawn in full like you would expect
exactly.
bubbles, but
yeah.
It isn't.
Yeah. And after Persephone is taken into the underworld, he is essentially adulterated. They have sex, but this kind of brings me back to the poet William Blake, who does like a lot of imagery between children who worked as chimney sweeps, and because they were experiencing the hardships of life at such a young age, they were essentially adulterated, and because they were working in the chimneys, their skin turned black. And essentially, when you see this again in Alice in Wonderland, where the white roses are turned red, in this situation, it's where this white porcelain virgin skin is turned black.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of chapter one, we are introduced to Orpheus and Eurydice. And again, this is another gender bend on Orpheus. Instead of male, he is female, which I really like that they're doing
this. Yeah, I was like, ooh, another couple appears.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Eurydice is concerned about the world perishing due to Demeter's lament. And if you're not too familiar with the Greek gods and everything, Demeter is essentially Persephone's mother.
Mm-hmm. God of harvest, and is basically upset because her child's gone.
And
so she's like,
where?
Guess what? Y'all get winter, because until she's back, I ain't giving you crops.
Yeah, and when I was kind of like reading the history about Demeter, it was also her way of like causing this famine and then all these people dying. It was her way of convincing the other gods to do something. Like, if you want people to survive, you better take action.
Yeah, right, because now. No one took her seriously because, oh, she's just a god of like crops and grains.
Yeah.
I'm the god of thunder.
Exactly. But we don't really see Demeter in this story. It's just she's mentioned and you see the effects, which is drawn beautifully.
Yeah.
But we'll get more into that later. And of course, Orpheus comes across as a very confident individual. She can do anything she wants because of the power of her laurel. And the scene essentially ends with a snake in the grass. If you're not familiar with the story of Eurydice and Orpheus, it is still foreboding why that snake is there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do know the story, then you know what's gonna happen.
Oh, it's so good.
It is. So I have to ask, did the story pull you in by chapter one?
I was pulled in at Hades, the character. I was like, I'm here. I have very little requirements for death characters.
Okay.
I'm like, you're here, I'm here.
That's fair. So when I first read this story, yes, I was interested because I do like Greek mythology, and I wanted to see how the artists handled the story, because mm-hmm. the original title I always heard for this story was The Rape of Persephone, so I'm like, oh yeah. God, there's going to be rape in this. Yeah,
especially.
But they handled it very well. It was not rapey at all, mm-hmm. and Persephone, while he didn't put up a fight, he seemed to just kind of fall under Hades' spell. Not that he was, there was like any noticeable magic happening, but he was just like, you know, I like what I'm feeling, yeah. I'm going to explore it.
It's like a naive, like, he's never had this opportunity before, and he's very attracted to
exactly.
it all of a
sudden. And that is...
He doesn't put forth, like, I'm uncomfortable. He's like, I don't know what this is, but I'm not hating it.
Yeah, yeah, and that is exactly how that scene is narrated. So I thought it was done very well.
Yeah.
And as I keep mentioning, the artwork is...
Oh my God, the artwork.
Very, very beautiful.
I came for the Hades, I stayed for the artwork.
Oh yeah, like the colors and the background blend together very well. And from the previous episodes that we've recorded on this podcast and our sister show, the artwork can really make or break it for the reader. Because I think it was you or Charles who mentioned, like, if the artwork sucks, you're not going to read it, essentially. I think I want to say it was Charles.
Maybe, yeah. I think so, because sometimes it's hard to struggle through.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm going to be honest, maybe not tell Melissa, I saw images of Promare, and it was very sharp and spiky,
oh,
and I'm like...
Oh, it's so beautiful, though. I thought so, too. When I first saw the poster, I was like, ugh, gross. But then I saw clips from the movie, and I'm like, never mind, I like this.
Okay.
So give it a try.
I will, but it's
watch
like...
Watch it at least once.
I definitely will, because everyone's saying good things. But just the artwork, I was just like... Eh.
Yeah, the first time I saw the post about, hey, we're going to go watch Promare, I saw the poster and I'm like, I don't like those idiots, bye. And then I watched a trailer of it and I'm like, maybe that's what I need to do.
See the trailer.
Never mind, I like this.
Yeah, but so, when
art.
When I reread the story last night, I was asking myself a lot more, why doesn't Persephone rebel? Because he just seems way too... submissive to it. I mean, he does ask questions, but he's not very forceful with it. Mm-hmm. And that may just come with him being a young godling.
Yeah. Because compared to Hades, he's real young.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, it's noticeable. Now, I would not say this is like an underage situation because they're, again, they're gods. They're ageless. So
I mean,
no
Persephone
one...
at this point is probably 1,000 and Hades like a million.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
What's numbers after that point?
Yeah, exactly. But I really wanted to see Persephone ask more questions like, when can I see my mother? Can I just let her know that I'm okay? Yeah. And a part of me was also wondering if Hades has these supernatural, if he has like any supernatural abilities that are affecting Persephone's judgment.
I almost want to say the fields of...
Was it where the warriors go when they die?
Just the fields, I forget what they're called. It's not... Elysium, it's the fields that people just go to and kind of become complacent and gray and nothing matters.
Oh.
And I'm like, is that sort of what it is? The sleepiness of
that's
that
what
area?
I was kind of wondering.
Or, but I mean, then it's still, I still think that Persephone has no way to get out, so he's also kind of like, eh. But I do notice that, like, especially in the second volume, he's purposely avoiding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's
and so
still
that's
doing that.
Sort of his rebellion right there. Maybe he doesn't think he can get by with anything else, but...
Right.
You know.
Because, yeah, Hades could potentially kill him. He doesn't know, because this is... That was, like, essentially the first time he saw Hades ever. He just mm-hmm. heard mention of him. And, like, he just pops
and
up in front
of him. And he's in a place where he has none of his powers work, because nothing
right.
grows down here. And it's, like, he's absolutely powerless in this area.
Right.
So it's sort of like a sustainability kind of thing. Like, I gotta be good because if not, I might get in trouble.
Right. But that's just our way of thinking, but he never has these thoughts running through his head, and you don't really see those concerned facial expressions on his face in the actual comic. So that's just us.
Honestly, that's one of the reasons why I like this comic, because it leaves the interpretation up to you entirely.
True.
Like, there's so much that becomes, like, interesting ways to read into it. I feel like anyone can pick this up, and someone can pick this up and go, oh my god, Hades awful. And then someone can pick this up and go, oh my god, Hades is amazing, and he's mm-hmm. so sweet to him. And then someone else can pick it up and go, I don't see how they're in love, you know? And so I feel like there's so many ways to read this and see it, because it's so, it doesn't give you the answers.
Right. Yeah. And honestly, despite asking all these questions, like, come on, Persephone, like, grow some balls. I still continued reading because I want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
So, chapter two, this is, again, the majority of it is narrated, but it's still entertaining to read. And in this chapter, Hades gives Persephone a tour of the underworld and shows him what all he has power over. And I could read that first part of the chapter over and over again because the backgrounds, the animals, like, it's so freaking beautiful. And of course, they also celebrate their union. And during this time, Hades keeps offering Persephone food to eat. But Persephone knows better that he will be locked in the underworld forever if he does eat anything. I was about to be a smart ass and ask, well, what if he just, like, sucked Hades' dick and then, like, you know, swallowed his semen? Does that count? I'm sorry. I'm sorry you all have to. I'm sorry. That's just the awful side of my brain. It needs to go away. But anyways, what gets me is that Hades can venture above ground. Why not his husband if he's so powerful and he can, you know, tame Cerberus?
Well, I wouldn't consider Persephone very powerful.
I mean, it's like, is he not Hades' equal in marriage now? Or is this some more bullshit?
Here's the thing. Hades is one of the big 12. Persephone is the blip on the god scale.
Fair, but it's like...
I mean, Hades is one of the big three, actually.
Right.
Like...
Oh, wait. So didn't Persephone just technically marry his uncle?
I mean, they're all related. Like, let's talk about how all the gods are related to Kronos.
Yeah, I made it awkward.
They're all babies from Kronos. So, yeah, let's just... They do each other's sisters and brothers all the time. It's common. This is Greek for you.
Yeah. Oedipus. I know it's Oedipus, but...
Yeah.
I saw one film.
I mean, it's not okay when Oedipus does it, but when the gods do it, it's fine.
No. Anyways, because Persephone keeps saying no to all the food that's offered to him, hunger starts to gnaw at him. And right when he does, this is when Orpheus appears in the underworld and asks for an audience with the couple. And unfortunately, it is right there that the story ends.
Which I find it interesting that Orpheus's story is connected to this. Like, that's not originally, they're usually two separate stories.
I thought they were. After it ended, like, I went and wikied the
Eurydice. It's been a while since I read
it. Oh, okay, maybe that's why. Because, yeah, I had to wiki it all again. Like, okay, maybe I should review who everyone is. Because it might give me some background information. Because, like I said, the chapters are so short. It's assumed that the reader is already familiar with these characters. Like, Hades and Persephone, okay, you should probably already know them, especially if you're in art history or something. But Eurydice and
Orpheus... If you're in Western culture, you should know these people.
Yeah, but honestly, I forgot Eurydice and Orpheus. Like, the names were not familiar.
It's not a very common story.
Yeah.
You always hear Hades and Persephone.
Oh, yeah.
You don't
always
hear Eurydice and Orpheus.
But as the story goes... So Eurydice was bitten by a snake and she died, ended up going to the underworld. Mm-hmm. Orpheus was so grief-stricken that he was playing on his laurel, and the music of it just touched all the gods. So they allowed him to go to the underworld and have an audience with Hades and Persephone and essentially make a deal saying, you can have Eurydice back. Mm-hmm. She'll be mortal. When she returns, you'll have to walk back up to the light, the surface of the world, without looking back. And Orpheus did not trust Hades. He thought that Hades was just going to pull a trick on him because Eurydice was a specter at the time. So Orpheus did not hear her footsteps behind him and he started to panic. And right when he was about to enter the light, he looked back and... Eurydice was pulled back into the spirit realm.
But I didn't know that happened. Like, in the story, that's a separate story with Persephone's and Hades from the Persephone's and Hades story. It's like after Persephone already joined him in the underworld sort of thing.
Yeah.
So having this contemporary with the story, like, happening at the same time is a new take on it.
That's true. See, yeah, I'm not sure where it falls in. Because, yeah, it does, when I was looking up what happens to Persephone afterwards, like, how does she get out of the underworld, it just said that...
She's only allowed for certain months.
Yeah, well, I don't remember how she got back up. I think it was just, like, maybe Zeus brokered a deal with Hades. Like, come on, just let her go see her mother or something. And as Persephone was leaving, Hades snuck a pomegranate seed into her mouth. So because she ate this little itty-bitty seed, she still had to stay in the underworld, despite not wanting to. So Zeus just said, okay, fine, you can stay up on the ground, above world.
Well, I read it, it was she ate 6 pomegranate seeds.
Oh, I heard that Hades, like, tricked her, like, stuck a seed in her mouth.
Well, I heard that she ate 6 pomegranate seeds. That's why 6 months out of the year she has to be in the
underworld. Oh, okay, maybe I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but yeah, you're right. I don't know where Orpheus's tale
falls.
Then again,
Greek god stories go back and forth on the accuracy. And yeah, depending on which one you read, is it the Roman version? Is it the Greek version?
True.
It changes.
Yeah. But yeah, you make a good point. I don't know where Orpheus appears. Is it before Persephone?
Or after they are a couple and married?
Well, I think it was after they're a couple, because Persephone's the one who's like, oh yeah, let Orpheus play the music. But I don't remember if Orpheus appeared before Persephone was allowed to return back to her mother or afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I was just curious to see how, like, I wanted to see more of Eurydice and Orpheus in this section.
Because it was about to get good. We were about to get that story and I was excited.
Yeah. So,
and we still haven't gotten, you know, the end of Persephone being forced, semi-forced to stay.
Right? Yeah, it's major creeper. But, so I can pretty much guess that you would definitely recommend this to others. So
just to read it, like, it's short, just to look at how beautiful it is. Like, it doesn't take a lot of time. Everyone knows the story. It's not anything like, ooh, this is new. It's just fun. It's just fun to look at.
Yeah. It's nice to reread, classic myths, but with a twist.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, it kind of livens it up, spices it up, you know? But yeah, I would definitely recommend it too, not merely because this version is BL, but just because of the fact that it's a different version.
Yeah.
And maybe someone who isn't BL will get a kick out of it, but I will warn people that it's on hiatus, so just, you know, why get attached to something that'll never continue, you have to wonder.
Yeah.
Because I know Charles would get on that.
Yeah, this one is a little better because I hate reading things that aren't complete too. But yeah, my difference between this one and any other one is I already know the story.
Yeah.
I know how it ends. It's not going to kill me to be like, oh, what happened? And always think, what if? This, I sort of know what's going to happen. I already know. Right. I just don't know how exactly.
And I
want to
see their version of it.
Yeah,
that's essentially exactly what I want to see.
But I don't know if we'll get that.
Yeah,
we can hope.
Yeah, we can only dream. But who is your favorite character? I know you're probably going to say Hades.
I mean, I like Hades, but I don't get a lot from him in this one.
Okay.
He's sort of stoic. I really like Persephone in this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely shows a lot more emotion. Hades is definitely
And I feel like there's a lot more happening in his head than anyone's given him credit for. Like, there's a lot going on there.
Yes. For me, it was Orpheus because he's prone to make mistakes. This kind of goes back to Obsidian Mirror, where I didn't really like Moonbird.
Yeah.
Because he was too perfect and wasn't flawed. But with Orpheus, and again, I should mention, I only know this information about Orpheus from what I read up in the wiki.
Yeah, in the original story.
Yeah.
Stuff.
But Orpheus was so overconfident that he could win Eurydice back and essentially protect Eurydice. You know, he just made that mistake. And I mean, that's just what makes him human. He's flawed. And Persephone, I don't know how. I mean, I like Persephone just fine in here. I just kind of feel bad that he's not fighting a little bit more. That's my only qualm. But I mean,
more plans.
Yeah, I have to give him credit. But there again, it's like, there's also just not enough information for me to, like, really make these decisions.
True.
Yet. Yeah. And that kind of leads me to, like, who is your least favorite character?
See.
It's hard to choose.
It's hard because they're all, like,
it's just getting started.
Same level of yeah, and it's just getting started, so I can't really hate anyone yet, because I don't know everyone's true intentions, because they haven't really been revealed or decided.
Right,
upon.
And I feel like we're just going off of suspicions here.
Yeah, I think at this point, I think because I don't know much about Eurydice, I think it would have to be her.
Okay.
Just because she was literally in it for like two pages and then.
Okay, that's fair. That's very it. Fair.
So I'm like, her. I'll pick her.
Yeah, and I found that interesting because in chapter two, when Hades is giving Persephone a tour, I noticed Persephone in the line of people going down the river Styx. And honestly, because you just saw this person for a split second in chapter one, you may not notice that it was them in chapter two.
It was her in chapter two?
Yes!
Oh, hold the phone.
Yes, she was front and center on the page. Sarah got lucky. She has both copies.
Haha, I have the explicit version.
Oh, yeah.
Mine has penis.
But also, yeah, I want to talk more about the what's at the end of chapter one. It's great.
Yes.
Just flipping through it right now.
Hold up. She alive. Did you imagine this?
No, I swear, it's in there. Hold up, are we missing a page in the physical copies?
No way.
No, I swear to God, you guys.
Hold on.
This is while they're on tour. Yeah, it was after, yeah. I think that page is not in the physical copies. No, here it is. It's right there. That's her right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's when Hades and Persephone are looking down at the river Styx as people are gathering. Yeah, so it's kind of near the end, but the very first panel is Eurydice.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but as for me, to get back on topic, my least favorite character is Hades, mostly because he's just expressionless, and maybe that's just because he's a god, and some gods just don't need to, you know, show human emotions.
I think he has a lot of expressions, especially when he looks at Persephone.
Fair, and they're just very subtle, but, mm-hmm. like, to me, his poker face just
he's
makes him seem...
He's got that Tsundere kind of thing going on.
It's so untrustworthy to me, though. And as I mentioned, I did continue reading the story to learn more about Hades, Persephone, and how their story ends. And he relies on trickery, not to convince Persephone to stay, but to make her stay.
I mean, that was the whole point with the food entirely.
Yeah. And yeah, the fact that...
Even in my version with the six seeds that she eats, it's still like, why trap her with food?
Yeah. And why it's like, do that? Hades thinks that this godling doesn't know any better and is not even going to tell his husband, hey, just, you know, fair warning, if you eat this... You can't ever see your mother again. You can't ever see your friends again. So, highly suspicious. But even without this knowledge, I still don't like him just for the fact that he kidnapped Persephone in the beginning. Just, man, you can't just, like, date them or something or just, you know, give them a bouquet or something.
I mean...
Just, come on.
All the Greek gods are shady. Let's be honest.
That's fair. His brother is Zeus.
I mean, compared to Zeus and Poseidon, I think he's the best brother.
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
Honestly, compared to them, good choice, Persephone.
Yeah.
If you had to make a choice between brothers.
Yeah, honestly, Hades, man. But who's your favorite couple between the two presented?
I would say Hades and Persephone.
Okay.
But
okay.
That's because I like the story.
Fair enough, yeah. Mine is Eurydice and Orpheus, because you have to wonder, will your significant other travel to hell to save you?
Oh,
goals.
No.
So what is one thing that you dislike, if anything, about this comic?
There's really nothing in particular mm-hmm. that I dislike. I really like it. It's really beautiful. I mean... And until I had the physical copies, I was like, I want more of the sex scenes. But then I got the physical copies and I'm like, I've got good sex scenes. So I didn't need like more out of it. That would have been the one thing. But now it's just like, I want more.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it's not so much the hiatus that I dislike. Because I get that, you know, shit happens in life. And honestly, you can't really complain about them being on hiatus too much. Because if you love both of these artists, they're still pumping out work for you to mm-hmm. follow, but it's just not this one.
I mean, the other one's on hiatus too, fun fact.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thanks, I hate it.
Yeah, the Born Sexy Tomorrow is now currently still on hiatus.
Oh boy. But going back to Eurydice and Orpheus, I'm just a little sad that they didn't explore their story more, because we could have learned more about Orpheus, essentially, and maybe see some of the other gods as well.
And I would have liked to see their relationship. Like, why is she so amazing that Orpheus is going to go all the way to hell and back to get her?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what, I mean, she's gorgeous, but I also want to see, like, their relationship, how important she was.
Yeah, and I also wanted to see Demeter. I just wanted to see her go off on the other gods. Yeah, so I wish they all had more screen time, essentially. And it would have been a nice break from the fact that Persephone's been kidnapped and is trying to be fed food in a very sneaky manner. It's just kind of uncomfortable for
me. Honestly, what I would like, and what I would hope for if I were taking upon the story is kind of give the audience like, oh, he kidnapped her. Oh, he's going to trap her. And then all of a sudden him change his mind and be like, no. I did this because I love you, but don't eat that. And then he decides, no, I want to stay.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be an interesting turn. That's what I would want.
That's one thing I was going to talk about in one of our next questions. Actually, why don't we just get to that now? Like, how do you think the story is going to end?
So I would like, I would like Orpheus and Eurydice to end the same way, but I would leave her. just because I like that story and what it says about, you know, not trusting and all this other stuff. I kind of like that story being sad, but I want Persephone to make the choice to stay.
That's what I wanted to see, too. And genuinely
have love between them.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to see. I don't want Hades to be having any more of this trickery nonsense. Yeah. And, you know, for a moment in chapter 2, when Persephone's kind of having this mini breakdown about being hungry, but knowing that he cannot eat anything and is essentially trapped, I swear, like, I did see a little bit of concern from Hades saying, well, do you want to, like, go home? Do you like, what do you want?
Yeah.
So I feel like the artists could have been moving in that direction where Persephone says, you know, I do love you, husband, but I still want to be with my family.
And it's kind of like Hades, you know, this may have sounded like a good idea when he first thought it out. And now that it's in fruition and he's seeing the pain it's actually causing, maybe he's this wasn't such a good, on paper, it sounded better on paper, and now I'm seeing you suffer, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
That I would like to see.
Yeah, me too. And I'm confident that that's the direction they would have taken. I mean, he is the
better brother, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have a good feeling like they would have taken that direction.
Yeah.
But what do you love most about this comic?
I just love the art, mm-hmm. The art. Oh my god. I can't talk about how amazing. This is why I've read everything else they've made, because I'm just like,
the artwork.
Like, her artwork is amazing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, too. Like, story aside, it's just very beautiful. It reminded me a lot of George Lucas, because in a lot of his films, he has this backlight finish or a spotlight fetish. And you see a lot of that in this comic where the background is lit and then in the foreground where the characters are, it's all just a silhouette and it gives the page more depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that they were able to make that happen.
I also like the stylistic choices in this because I've read the other works. Like, these characters, like we were talking about how their expressions are very stoic. They don't convey a lot with their face or body.
And that I don't like too much, but I mean, the artwork's still good.
I think it has more to do with the type of story. Like, it's Roman, it's Greek, it's ancient, it's supposed to be the stoic thing. Whereas, like, their other works, Born Sexy Tomorrow is ridiculous and crazy, and the characters are all over the place with their expressions, and this one is so different, and I feel like it has more to do with the type of story it is, being classical kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So how often do you reread this story?
Whenever I cross my bookshelf and I'm reorganizing and I'm like, I have this, then I just flip through it and I'm like, hoo-hoo,
penis. It's short enough. Yeah, it's short enough that you can just get it over and done with.
Yeah.
But for me, it's not that often. You reminded me a couple of times to reread it. I don't know if I really did or not. Because at the time, there weren't too many updates that were occurring. It was most... Yeah.
Now that it's not updating anymore, it's like, unless I'm flipping through my physical copy, I really don't.
Yeah, but I mean, they had a good update schedule from what it looked like. It was like 2 or 3 times a month, depending on what was going on.
And it was consistent until the hiatus, which is nice. So if they do bring it back, I feel like they would bring that as well, the consistency of updates.
But yeah, you can read the story in an hour, so definitely give it a chance. But for me, the main reason I really don't go back and reread it is because there's no, like, fan theories that you can really speculate over.
Other than what we've sort of talked about is interpretation of what you're seeing, because they don't provide the actual details.
Yeah.
Which is fun. I think that's fun.
Yeah, that is. Like, it prompts you to go and look it up and, hey, you learned something new.
Like, look at this micro expression. What do you think that means?
Yeah.
Or he looked at him this way.
Yeah, you could probably read into that a little more. Yeah. But it just seemed almost pointless to go back and reread it just because it's so short at this point and there's not much to speculate over. But what I do like when I do go back and read it is just the artwork and then the memories along with it. Mm-hmm. Because it's been maybe a year or two since I've read this. Definitely a year.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who are interested in buying this, I'm afraid that you cannot purchase this anymore. The physical copies do have more explicit content, maybe 1, 2, 3 pages more.
And it's only the sex scenes, and there's almost no talking during the sex scenes.
Right, so you really...
In fact, I really don't think there is any talking in the sex scenes.
Yeah, you really didn't miss anything, but the funny bit at the end...
Nope, it's just pictures.
Yeah. But chapter one's pretty funny because it looked like the artists pretty much gave a summary of the original story, but it was, I'm looking at it now, I haven't read all of this yet, but just when I was flipping through this over at Sarah's house, I just have to share this one line with you, it's so great. And then Helios just fucks off in his chariot with his winged horses like, okay, see ya, bye, leaving Demeter to rage with terrible and savage grief.
That is the Greek gods right there.
Yeah.
in a sentence.
I just kind of want to read it because it sounds like they gave a really humorous version of it all.
Yeah, it's real funny.
And I really would have appreciated that in my art history classes. But yeah, that's it. If you enjoy these artists, please go and support them on their AO3 account and their Patreon account. And maybe, you know, be respectful. Maybe don't harass them about God in the Field, because I'm sure they'll get back to it eventually, especially if this is like a passion project for them.
Yeah, there was a lot of reasons why they stopped this. I think the last page, the last update admits that they had they're moving or something, and they're going to be in different areas now, like the artist and the writer.
That, and Archia is not a U.S. citizen.
Yeah,
she went back to wherever, and yeah, it's just really hard. She hasn't had, when I originally read the message, it said that she had not set up her computer yet in her new home. I'm sure it's set up by now, but as she mentioned on her Patreon page, she and her partner are doing another project. And they have a lot of stuff going on, so do support them if you can.
Mm-hmm. It's worth it just for the art, guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I mean, if they can just have a full income from their Patreon account to work on their artwork, I'm sure sooner than later they're going to get back to God in the Field.
Or one of their titles, which are all good.
Right, yeah. So please do go check it out. It's worth your time. We swear you can read it in less than an hour. All right. Well, we hope you all have a good holiday season. We will see you next year. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to 801 Reviewed. You can find more episodes of this show and the 801 podcast on Simplecast and iTunes. If you enjoy the show or want to help us out, please consider leaving a review or donate to our Patreon page. And remember, if you have any information about Charles, please contact our 1-800 number. Thank you.